The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Do you wear a mask while you're talking?
No.
No.
You're welcome to take it off.
Okay.
Yes, so before the end of the day, we should talk a little bit about COVID.
Do you want to start with that?
I want to make sure everyone's here.
Okay.
Because there are some people who, I think Shri and AJ, there were messages, it was a message from you. So Jennifer, we need to know, and Vanessa, can you hear fine? Just like that. Okay. So I'm going to hide self-view so we can see them better. Unless you feel like it's important for us to see ourselves. And Vanessa, can you say something and let's find out how it works on that end for us to hear? We can't hear anything. Let's see. Try now.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So welcome. And okay, Paul.
There was a message from Alan on Slack. Did you see that?
No.
He said running late, it's probably 9:30.
Okay. So Alan coming at 9:30 maybe.
Okay. Any other announcements? No? Okay, well, today's parami is truth. Satya. How would you pronounce that word, Gil? Satya?
Satya in Pali.
Satya.
Satya in Pali, Satya in Sanskrit.
Okay. So that's what we'll be discussing today, and how it's relevant to chaplaincy. But before we do, we will meditate.
Throat clearing in preparation for the meditation.
Yes. Get ready to do nothing.
If we're lucky.
Or to notice all the unnecessary doing. That's running itself. Yeah. And then what is it to be truthful about what's going on for you as you meditate? What kind of disposition brings a clarity, a truthfulness? And maybe an empathy for what is going on in your being, in the thoughts in your head, in your mental, emotional disposition. So it is. This is what's happening. It's its own truth. So good morning again. And Alan is, he sent a message and he's not attending or he's coming late? Oh. Oh, 9:30. Okay. So, a few minutes. There's a marvelous way that when we meditate, we sort of settle into the truth, you know. The way in which the truth is supported by a kind of clarity, an inclusivity of here and now, and a settledness, you know, the capacity to be able to take it in. One of the classic Buddhist teachings is there's two truths. You know, maybe in common language we'd say the subjective and the objective. In more in the language of Buddhism, it would be the relative and the absolute. But in a way, there's a whole continuum between those two, what we might think of like thoroughly subjective, and then the other one, thoroughly impersonal and objective. There's a Zen story where, which it's a true story. Not that the other Zen stories, but the, usually they're shrouded in maybe. Maybe that really happened. Or maybe over the hundreds of years, it developed a few more extra details. But this one seems to be quite true. So Hakuin, a monk, a mendicant monk, was living on the edge of a village. In the village, there was a young lady who had what we might call an extramarital affair and got pregnant. And when her parents asked who's the father, rather than, you know, tell who the father was, she wanted to protect him, and she said it was Hakuin, the monk. And so the villagers were outraged and said, okay, you've got to take the baby and you've got to raise the baby. So he did. He just said, you know, you're a terrible, awful person. And he said, is that so? And he took the baby and he raised the baby. And he kept the baby, and one version of the story says, for 6 months. I find that hard to believe, but... and during that whole time, the criticism and derision was intense. And then eventually... The lady who had the baby relented and said, actually, I made that up to protect the real father, and he's not the father. This other guy's the father. And the villagers were utterly struck by his patience, his acceptance, and the way he just took care of the baby. And they said, you're a saint, you know, you're such a holy person exhibiting these amazing qualities. And he said, is that so? And the reason I tell that story is to ask myself and you, this notion of kind of an unshakable truth, you know. How can any one of us establish a truth, a truthfulness within ourselves that isn't swept away by public opinion? Yeah. And then, of course, that story turns it into stark relief. You know, like when someone enthuses about something, you know, that maybe you don't feel enthusiastic about, or maybe you have opinions that are in contrast to that, you know. Yeah. Can you hold your truth? Are there circumstances under which other people's opinions sort of replace your own? Well, everybody seems to think this. So I'll take it on as a truth, or as the truth. And then in a way, you know, that consideration tells us there's a way in which truthfulness is a very significant and powerful practice. You know, it helps bring a clarity. You know, I think we all know the term radical honesty. Yeah? And to that radical honesty internally, you know, being as truthful with ourselves as we can, it helps to establish a version of truth that, while it's still subjective, there's something about it we trust. Yeah. It doesn't disappear into what seems to be the conventional truth. Not that it's in opposition, but it's a way in which we know ourselves. Yeah. And it's very helpful for chaplains. Actually, I would say it's very helpful for anyone who has to enter a situation and sustain a certain position. You know? And then for a chaplain, you know, that position is, it has integrity, it has ethics, it has compassion, it has empathy. You know? Like these are qualities that we are intending to uphold. And truthfulness and that radical honesty with which we attend to our own being. Yeah. Because there is a very human way in which we are influenced by our own preferences, our own perspectives, our own ideas of what's right and what's wrong, and what's true and what's not. That we're influenced by those, and we're strongly influenced by our own psychology. You know? And so the practice of radical honesty helps us engage all of those influences with an attentiveness and draw them into clarity. This is my opinion. These are the values that I intend to uphold. This is my perspective of what's going on in the room. This is my perspective of what's going on inside of me. You know? You know, there's one way we can think about that story about Hakuin, and we can think, despite all the powerful voices of condemnation and then praise, he stayed true to a certain sense of being. He he stayed true to certain values and ways of being in the world. That he trusted that. That he had, through his radical honesty and the inquiry that it creates, he had established that capacity. Yeah. And then how do we do that? Yeah. And one of the attributes of radical honesty is it's inviting us to keep exploring. Well, if I'm radically honest, what do I see coming up in my own being? You know, here's what I want to have happen. Here is my bias, you know. I like this person, I don't like that person, or I don't like that about this person, or I disapprove, in terms of ethics, I disapprove of that kind of behavior, you know. So we establish the clarity, and yet we still have the question, and how does that manifest itself? You know, in any given situation. You know. Like as teachers, we often find ourselves saying, well, be honest with yourself, even if you never repeat it to a single person. You know, admit to yourself what's going on inside of you. And it's a practice, you know. It's a practice very aligned with awareness practice, you know, which is simply saying something very similar, which is, you know, be aware of anything and everything that's happening. Yeah. That within awareness practice, we're not trying to pre-select. Yeah. And yet, for almost all of us, there's some impulse in that direction. You know, oh, I shouldn't have these negative thoughts. I shouldn't have these negative emotions. I should be kinder. I should be more accepting. I should be have the equanimity of Hakuin and just say, is that so? Yeah. And so a sensitivity and a connectedness to the internal, to what's going on for us, and then a sensitivity to the interpersonal. Yeah. Like in some ways, that story about Hakuin, he simply stayed separate from the conventional truth. First that he was a villain, and then he was a saint. You know, he didn't buy into either. And was happy not to do so. But actually, as a chaplain, as a person in society, as a person in whatever kind of networking of we're involved in, you know, whether it's our partner or people close to us or society at large, you know. You know, often at City Center, where Kay and I practice and live, it's all sorts of people knock the front door. And with all sorts of dispositions and attitudes and notions as to what happens in the Zen center. And we're challenged. Okay. Do we invite everyone in? Or what kind of values do we uphold? And this is especially important for a chaplain. Yeah. Like, it's not unusual when someone's in a distressed situation, and usually that's how the chaplain is there. You know, whether it's a hospital, a prison, or on the street. No. Usually there's some kind of distress, some kind of lack of harmony of being. And then, what is being upheld? What is the truth that's being upheld in that situation? And how is it upheld? Yeah. And what is the conventional truth that's coming to play on it, on that situation? And often, whether or not we endorse the conventions or the conventional truth of the situations, we are obliged to engage them. Yeah. Hospitals have their rules that express the values and truth they want to put forth. Prisons do too. You know? And then an unstructured situation like that many homeless people find themselves in, it has a truth to it too. And then what truth are we upholding when we interact with any one of those situations? Yeah. And can we have a clarity about it? And can the way we're holding it, can it be inclusive? Can it allow for... Yeah. I know someone very well who unfortunately right now is in the throes of addiction. No. And the truth of being addicted is when you need a fix, that's the most important thing. And in order to get that addiction, that fix, your values, your integrity, you know, your set of boundaries and honesty often disappear. That's my experience of the truth of addiction. So, do we shun the person? Do we stay separate from them? Or can we include that in an appreciation of the person? Right now, this is the world. This is the truth they're living. And I can relate to that truth. I don't have to condone it. I don't have to follow its dictates. But I can stay empathetic. I can trust something of my own practice, of my own ethical integrity, and still be compassionate, still be helpful. So this the radical honesty helps us set the stage, set the capacity, create the capacity for entering situations and discovering, well, what's the truth of this situation? What is the truth of this person? So in Buddhism, in terms of objective truth, there's one notion that something like direct experiencing with bare attention, that's the objective, factual experience of the moment. And then there's another teaching in Buddhism that says any experience has a bias, whether it's a blatant bias or a very subtle bias. But whatever it is, it has its own bias. And I would say to you that that subtle difference between direct experiencing and subtle biased experiencing, it doesn't matter so much, because most of the situations we're engaged in as a chaplain, they have all sorts of biases, all sorts of prejudice, all sorts of assumptions, all sorts of operating influences on the situation. When we were driving down, Kay was saying to me, her ministry is joining the night ministry in San Francisco. And I was thinking, what would it be like to be wandering around as a homeless person all night? And thinking, no. It's a world I don't know. You know. So sometimes we enter with that kind of humility. I don't know what this person is going through. I don't know their truth. That really, at this point in time, for me, is to just be not knowing. Yeah. So that too. And that has its own kind of clarity. You know? Clarity isn't, I have all the answers. Clarity has a range, you know. And I would say even internally, you know. We know ourselves to a degree. And have a clarity around that. And then also have a clarity around, there's more to learn about the self and the truths and the biases that I uphold. Then there's the collective truth that we're functioning within, and then there's the times just when we don't know. And that's how we enter the situation. And in some ways, that applies all the time. You know, we don't know what's going on for someone at that particular moment. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
So, thank you, Paul. Paul inspired me to say a few words kind of along the line of what he said, and then I'd like us to do a kind of ritual about truth to prepare ourselves for a practice of truth. So those are the three things we're going to do next. So first, a few words. In the earliest Pali suttas, there's this wonderful teaching that I'm inspired by. And I, because of its importance, when I teach courses on the middle-length discourses, we always begin on this one sutta that has this teaching. Can you hear me okay? And it's a teaching on the preservation of truth, how to preserve the truth. And as Paul said, we are influenced by our preferences and perspectives and different things. And Paul called upon it. We should have some sense of what those are. That's part of the truth as well. And so preserving the truth is to know the basis upon which we understand our situation, how we interpret our situation, how we make a claim about anything. So you would preserve the truth by saying, I think it's true that X, and I think that because I base it on my scriptures. Based on my scriptures, I hold this to be truth. Based on my faith, I hold this to be true. Based on my reasoning, this is true. Based on my experience, this is true. And, you know, maybe based on my preferences, this is what I'm seeing is true right now. And so there's explaining the basis upon which you make a truth statement. Then you preserve the truth. But if you simply say, X is true, categorically true, you know, this is true, then people are not left with, well, that's interesting, but why should I believe that? Or where is it coming from? Or it's just kind of maybe confusing, or it's an authoritarian statement, or all kinds of things. So this teaching about preserving the truth, I think is a brilliant thing. And so based on what do you have a statement? And so chaplains, you know, have to make all kinds of decisions, sometimes say things of what they perceive. And so maybe there's a way to oneself as a chaplain, but also to others, you might say something that preserves the truth. I'll say things like to people, like, based on what I'm hearing now, based on how I'm hearing this, or based on my background, as I hear this, I'm oriented towards looking at it from this angle. And this is what I see. When I say that, then it's contextualized, and people then have more permission to reflect on it and see, is this really true, or is this true for me? Because, you know, this person didn't say this is the truth, and the authority of a chaplain, it must be true, but rather they're saying, you know, it's conditional. It's based on this kind of stuff. And so how do you make truth statements in the chaplaincy role if you're called upon truth statements that are make room for people and allow people to understand or to think for themselves or to explore it for themselves rather than, you know, make it something absolute that they have to either believe or not believe. And that's one way, preserving the truth. So now our little ritual. I have 12 pieces of paper. I didn't really think out carefully how many we were here today. I kind of thought as I was cutting them out, it was different sentences from a document, and I just thought I was doing a lot. And it turns out that a lot was less than I thought. So now there's exactly, because I wanted the faculty to be included. But as it is, it's just enough for each of you. So then we just make it a different ritual. It's a ritual that there's two witnesses for who will hold the space and hold it compassionately, clearly, openly, and lovingly for as you go through the ritual. And there's also the people online who will also hold it lovingly with their eyes closed and just all this wonderful stuff. So since I'm wired up, Maybe, Paul, would you hand these out?
Sure.
Maybe go around, but do them in order in which they're placed. So that's the first one, the top one, and then that would go to K and so forth.
And they're all...
They're not numbered, but just that's the order they're supposed to be passed out in.
Okay.
And we'll start with K. And those of you who have been at Zen Center, we'll do this kind of like a... A little bit like the what's called the Nenju ceremony. And Nenju means that you go around in a circle standing and address each person. And then you would, so maybe like, and then you would move on to the next person. And you come back to where you were, and then you would stand where you were where you started, and then the people who left the circle to follow the procession will pass you by. So everyone passes each other by twice. Does it make sense? So Kay knows how to do this. So, right. But you know how to do an Nenju, right? How you go to each person. So you go. You would go to Letissa, and you would read your statement. Wait, just a moment. Just read his statement. Then you would... move to the next person and read your same statement. Same statement. You're going to read your statement to everyone, and everyone's going to hear your... So each person's going to hear your statement once, but you're going to say it many times. You're welcome to memorize it as you go around, so you can really inhabit it if you're up to it. And then after you pass Letissa, then you would follow him, follow her, and do the same to Sage. And then after doing for her, you would do it to Kristen. And you would just... and so everyone's following each other that way. Kay comes back to stand where she is, and then you would... Kristen would just wait for Letissa would come next. And you'd read a statement to him. And then you take your place again. So that's the ritual. Does it make sense? So why don't you also maybe stand for this and make a circle in front of your dear witnesses, and so you can come kind of a sort of, yeah, so it's fine, and so.
Just to
the one person. Don't make it too loud so everyone hears it, because that's just so many voices. And if it helps maybe to back up a little bit so there's a little bit more space between people, it might be nice. And so you can start. Thank you. I think we'll give her till later. Now you've received some teachings about truth. Now you've offered and heard ritual words about truth. And so taking a moment to sit quietly and see what lingers for you or what's happening for you now with that, and what was touched, what was activated, what was inspiring, what was concerning. How are you after all of that? So then consider, sitting here, if you are honest with yourself, what is true? What do you think is the most truthful thing you can recognize in yourself? About what would support you to be more fully here? What has to be said? What would be admitted or acknowledged so that you could be more fully here for this class today or this morning? And what's happening for you? What concerns do you have? What emotions or states do you have? That if it was acknowledged and seen honestly, would support you to just really be here. Or help you be here. Maybe help you be here because this is, whatever it is included as part of the whole. And then now, for the last part of all this, is if you could pair up with someone else, and then I'll explain to you what happens next. So silently pair up if you could. Is anybody? So, if you're comfortable with it, let this person know what is the truth, what is the acknowledgement of how you are right now, that would help you be here more fully. If it's too personal, maybe there's something else in that domain that would be helpful. Like, I should need to go pee. if you want to play it really safe. But whatever, so as you're comfortable, but share it and like talk a little bit about it. Maybe also why acknowledging this or including this would support you to be fully here, and perhaps the person whose name, first name, is earliest in the alphabet can start. Or the first two letters are earliest. Oh. If it hasn't happened already, you can switch, or if you're just going back and forth, just continue. Return, return. Return from where you came. Or not. So now you've had, in some ways, three different doors to this topic of truth. You had Paul's wonderful teachings about it. You had a ritual about truth, truth statements. And you had a personal conversation about it. And I don't know if the sequence of those prepared you for the conversation you had, kind of brought you into the moment in a different kind of way, ready to talk about this, or easier to talk about truth this way, or your how you are right now. So I'd be curious to start off with some comments from you about what was the unfolding that happened to you over this morning so far that led up to now? What happened to you with this topic of, in relationship to this truth? Was there kind of a journey through these three different segments of the day, of the exploration of truth, that were you changed in some way, or did it support you in some way? What was that journey like to go through that? Maybe some, not a long story about how it went, but I'd love to hear from a few of you to get some sense. And if you use the mic also, then we can hear, but also the people online can hear.
Last few weeks I've been feeling rather ungrounded and came in with some cloudiness, and the repetition going through the rituals, like just the talk and then the repetition of hearing each thing, both myself saying it and then getting the gift of all of them, have very clarifying, like a wash for like the cloudiness in the mind, and then the talk aloud, like greater, like a refinement of what's kind of happening and what's present, and that lowercase subjective T truth, what's happening right now.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed hearing everyone's statements. And I'm seeing through the way the statements are phrased that sometimes I mix up truth with ideal, which I'm seeing, well, obviously that's not the truth because that's an ideal. But I think it's like I have this like ideal of honesty that doesn't actually match up with what's happening a lot of times. And I'm seeing that, oh, I don't have to do that. I can just be with the truth. So that was really helpful. Thank you.
This isn't really exactly related to the sequence or what we did, but what I think it was my statement or one of them, different parts of them, but what struck me is that I didn't think of it before, but how closely it seems like mindfulness and, well, I don't know what the difference is between truth and honesty, but I'll say honesty. Yeah, I guess honesty. How closely mindfulness and honesty are related. Because if you're not being honest with what your experience is, then it seems like you're not being mindful, and sort of vice versa. But also I noticed that for me, in the same way that mindfulness requires us to slow down, because if it's just going quickly, we're not catching it and barely being aware, but it seems like the same with being honest with ourselves or honesty. If you're not going slowly enough, I'm missing what's happening than just going on autopilot and not being honest with what I'm actually experiencing and my behavior.
Great. That's wonderful. I like that. And sometimes I think I define or say that or understand that honesty is mindfulness out loud, this close connection between the two.
Yes, I was just noticing some interesting thing about inherent subjectivity of my conception of truth. I appreciate in the progression of this ritual that it brought up some things for me, say, going on this past week, having more to do with work. And through this ritual, I was able to settle down and think about that in a more objective way and calm things down. I found that very helpful, but I do realize that my personal truth may vary to some degree, writ small, based on what may have been going on with me or around me in the recent past. But I also think, writ large, a lifetime of experience informs our own sense of truth, and that may be more of an enduring inherent bias, for lack of a better word, which is interesting. But
the degree to which truth is conditional.
Right, yes.
Yeah, I was reflecting on false talk a little bit, and the story you gave, Paul, made me think more. I know the story about the monk, that monk is probably more an elevated or more awakened state, but a more of a common person like me, able to not say anything for the incorrect statement and bear the suffering for 6 months seems rather harsh and causes unnecessary suffering. And to me, I think in this world, if you don't speak the truth and kind of just say, okay, this is my personal truth, but I'm not going to speak out, that causes extreme suffering in some cases, and as at least my experience in the society is. I don't know how to kind of bridge the gap, so I'd like to hear your thoughts there. Thank you.
I am so relieved to have found a spiritual religious practice in Buddhism that relies on the truth. Thank you. The ritual was lovely. I hope we'll have access to all the statements of it if they could come for us. So I was raised in a faith where I memorized creeds. You know, I believe in this, I believe in this, I believe in all of those. And I also grew up in a life where I had to keep secrets. So there were a lot of things that weren't true, a lot of things I had to keep secret. And then I had to say that I believed all these things that didn't really have any, for me, basis in reality. So to come here and to participate in this ritual where the emphasis is on truth and honesty and purity and being a true person was like getting washed clean, being liberated, just like my shoulders could come down further. So thank you, everyone.
It feels like from Paul's, your lecture to the ritual and then having an encounter with Alan, it's it kind of, to me, the analogy, it's more like from objective to subjective. It's from, for me, least impactful to most impactful. It's kind of tuning the radio stations, you know, that was a loud broadcast, and then as you guys are doing the ritual, it was kind of fine-tuning. I hear some, I don't hear some. Something is more resonates with me, something less. And then finally, when I get to talk to Alan, it's more, he was more present for me, and then that was the most impactful, I hear the most. So, and of course, life experience, it's truth kind of changes throughout my life, and but there's always the absolute truth that kind of sits in my heart, and that is the knowing that doesn't change. It's there, and then with all the things that's going on, I mean, that truth kind of varies throughout my life. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Just a reflective triptych on the morning's journey. Paul's talk and invoking the power of recognition of truth is kind of like the calling gong, the Zendo calling gong. It's like, come to the present. And the come to the present and be in what's uncontrived. And then the ritual is, this is really personal. This goes all the way to the heart. And then the exchange goes, there's no solid person who's holding the personal. The personal is in-breath and out-breath. The in-breath of the truth of what we let in, and the out-breath of letting go of there being a me container that holds it.
Thank you. So we're about to finish this part of it, so if someone wants to still say something, this is the time. So for some rituals, we did half the ritual to be In some rituals, there's a kind of coming in and a journey that's kind of going kind of into the center in a sense. But then the ritual is complete when the journey is out. So this description of that you gave here so nicely about, you know, this journey into the most personal. Now, imagine that you are now taking it outwards from the personal and into the more general, into the more universal, into the teaching, but as a way of kind of returning with a new way, returning with some more spacious way or open way, or returning with a kind of openness to truth in a new way. That's one of the ways a ritual would do, but something like that. There would be a going in and then a coming out. And it doesn't have to be that way, but it's one way to consider this. So also, some of you, maybe you don't feel complete or you're not ready to kind of just suddenly pop out to a break and have a big conversation. If we had followed that other, the second, you know, this, the model of rituals where you'd come out of it, you also might be more ready for coming back into the more ordinary life. So one of the topics for today that we'll talk about this afternoon is, in fact, rituals. So this was a kind of preparation for that this afternoon as well, so we have an experience of it. And it was a relatively impromptu invented ritual. It just kind of occurred to me this morning how to do it. So, and the reason to say that is that chaplains often are doing impromptu rituals. And so as an example, here's, you know, it came from elements that I've had from the past, so I've put them together into this. So it was just kind of, you know, it was made up. And so thank you for participating. So we'll take a break. And if it was impactful in some way that you want to talk to Paul or I, we're here so that you, for the support. But otherwise, we'll take a break and start again in here in 15 minutes on the hour at 11 o'clock. Thank you.